The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And this one, royalty, Bordeaux royalty, CEO, president of Chateau Jean Larousse. It is Nicolas Sinoquet. Nicolas, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you very much for having me with you.
Let's start here because I butchered all of that. Could you please pronounce your last name correctly for the audience so they can laugh at me?
Sinoquet.
All right. And the second part, I always mispronounce, and I've heard it so many different ways. Joron. I actually listened to many interviews you've done. Everyone interviewing you pronounced your chateau differently. What is the correct way?
Gruau Larousse.
Perfect. Okay. Which, of course, second growth in Saint-Julien. And we'll get to the estate and your wines, but I wanted to start here, Nicolas. How did you first fall in love with wine?
I think it's because my grandparents, they own a wine shop, like a grocery and wine shop. And it was, I think, the beginning, because I'm not from a wine region. I'm from the northwest of France. And that's probably because of that.
Do you remember, was there a wine that really kind of turned you onto it, or was it just you were having wine all the time?
I don't know. We are not having wine all the time. But, you know, there was kind of, because we were not in a wine growing region, wine was kind of a mystery for us and for this part of my family. It was like a different universe. And there is a kind of mystery thing.
So then how do you go from your grandparents' grocery / wine shop to now heading up a very famed winery? Did you go to school? What were the next steps for you?
Yes, I went to an engineering school in Bordeaux to study wine. And then I went to a business school for an MBA. And after that, I started to work on the spirit business. And after a few years, I wanted to go back to the wine business. So I moved to Gigondas and then to Carcassonne in the Languedoc. And I end up in Saint-Julien because the Gruau Larousse is part of my family. So I moved back to the family business.
You have hearing that story, that is very different from a lot of the people in charge in Bordeaux, where it's the estate is in the family or someone grew up in Bordeaux. You know, listening to you, you started in the north, you went down to the south, and then you ended in the middle.
Yeah, but you know, you get more and more people coming from outside of Bordeaux in Bordeaux. Because the wine in Bordeaux is very attractive in terms of quality and also the classified growth. I have enough money to pay people with very that are well educated, and there is more and more interest for the young people to work in that business. And Bordeaux is obviously one of the places to be.
Well, let's start here. Tell people a little bit about Larousse. Let's start with the terroir. We had a great tour with you back in September. But what do people need to know about the land around you?
It's 82 hectares. It's mainly made with a stone, the white stone that we call a grave. And the size hasn't changed since the classification. So that's what we call an historical chateau. And it's mainly planted with Cabernet Sauvignon, let's say 70%. 20% Merlot and 5% Cabernet Franc and 5% Petit Verdot, more or less.
Are you guys a little bit heavier on the Cabernet? Like, is your is your percentage higher than a lot of the people around you?
Yeah, the Cabernet is becoming higher and higher in terms of percentage. Now we are almost at 85% in the blend of the Grand Vin. But that's the varietal that fits the Médoc for sure. And the... So there is a trend right now to have more and more Cabernet into the wine.
Is that a stylistic choice because of the consumers? Is that because of the weather? Is there any reason for that?
I think the main reason is in the past, let's say 50 years ago, the goal in making wine wasn't the same. We wanted to make good wines, of course, but the price are not the same, and we are not making money as we are making now. And so we had at that time, we had to find the balance between quality and also making sure that every year you're going to get some some wine. So at that time, like I'm saying 50 years ago, the soil in the Médoc and in Gruyère-la-Rose was, it's a soil for the Cabernet. But the Cabernet, so what people used to do is the Cabernet gets ripe a bit later than the Merlot. So what they used to do is they used to put the Cabernet on the outside part when it's a bit colder and the Merlot on the top. Doing that, they were sure that there is no frost that will damage the Cabernet on the outside. But doing that, you're sure of the amount of wine you're going to produce, but you're not too sure about the quality by itself, because then sometimes the Cabernet didn't get ripe as it should be. So now the focus, it's only about quality. Of course, we want to make some wine, but as we are making more money on the wine, we can accept to lose a bit of the production. So now we put back the Cabernet on the top part, and then the Merlot on the outside part when it's a bit colder, and the Merlot needs less warmth and heat. So doing that, you get more and more Cabernet, because our soil is more of a Cabernet soil. That's the main reason.
I'm always like asking, especially people in Bordeaux, this: what does the Cabernet bring to the wine? What does the Merlot and the Franc and the Petit Verdot? What is the main thing that they each bring to the menu?
Really, it depends to each terroir. The Cabernet, that's really the structure of the wine. That's the main thing to do a very specific and I would say a very classical Médoc wine. And then the Merlot, it's a bit rounder. The Franc, I'm not a big fan of Cabernet Franc, and I'm not sure it's doing well in the Médoc. We have to do some muscle selection. It's not easy. The Petit Verdot, it's a bit spicy, but it's a bit like the Cabernet Franc. When you've got very high level in terms of quality, sometimes the Petit Verdot is not that good. At Gruau, the Cabernet Franc, which is not super interesting at Gruau, might work or work very well in the other side of Bordeaux, in Saint-Emilion. So that's really, I mean, you have to find your own way, and also because of your taste. And I'm a very big Cabernet Sauvignon fan.
Yeah, you could tell with the blend of it. How is 2023 treating you guys? How is this vintage?
Good. I mean, so far so good. I mean, right. It has been a tough year because of the weather. So we are from the 2022 organic. So that's our second year certified organic. So it has been tough. In terms of treatment and the time we spent in the vineyards. And then it was very hot. And we didn't expect such a beautiful vintage. It is quite surprising. The yield are quite okay as well. So right now we can say it's a very good vintage. I'm not too sure it's going to be an exceptional vintage, because, you know, it's like one in a 15 years, but it's going to be a very good one.
Yeah. If every vintage is exceptional, then there's really no such thing. You gotta kind of save it. And by the way, you were right about the warmth. When we were there, there was a lot of hot days in early September in Bordeaux.
Yeah. And it worked well. And when we test the wine right now, you don't feel that warm in the wine. But it's a bit like the O3. Yeah? O3, it was extremely warm. And then if you didn't wait too much to pick up the grapes, then it will do some good wines.
You mentioned you're now certified organic. How important was that for you and for the Chateau?
It is important on different sides. The first one is to make sure that you're going to get your wine, or that your company or your business will still be there in many years. And then make sure as well that the people that are working in your estate don't get exposed to a product that shouldn't be, because, you know, it's a family estate and we've got people here working there for more than two or three generations. So that's the first thing, better for everybody, the people, the vineyards, for everything. It's not the best solution. There is no one solution, because, you know, when you do that, you also use more gas to do the treatment and stuff like that. But it's so the first thing is you're sure it's better for everybody. And then it also make you So the relation you've got with the vineyard is different because you have to be extremely careful because of the disease and the oidium and mildew. So it changed your relation with the vineyards, with the plants by itself. It's extremely interesting.
How different is your job and the jobs of all the workers now versus, say, 10 years ago or 5 years ago before you became certified?
I think we give more attention to the weather and to the plant by itself. I think we're getting more and more into the details, and the link with your environment is much stronger, because you know that doing that you have to work during Saturday or Sunday, and then you have to, you know, with the chemical part, we also own estate that are not organic, huh? So there is it's different, but doing that you have to be more and more careful and more intimate with the vineyards and with your wine, and then with the environment.
You mentioned about many different generations of workers. How important is that, especially for the people that are working in the vineyards? How important is it to have people that have been doing it year in and year out?
It's extremely important. It's a community. You know, sometimes it's difficult to find good people. So when you have good people at your place or around, you have to keep them. And also, there is more and more things that we know in the vineyards because of science, but there is a lot of things as well that we don't know. That's just because of experience. That's because of and if you have been working on the same place for 30 years, and then, you know, we've seen the kids growing, and then, you know, they know the estate. There is a part of of your job that you can't explain. And that's the same for the employee, the same for my kids, it's the same for everybody.
I guess knowing, you know, almost knowing each row, knowing
yes,
the land.
And, so you know, and then also the respect you've got for what you're doing, for your job, for the estate. And, you know, because you're part of it. And then if you have to do, you know, I mean, in Saint-Julien, we are all making superb wine. No question about it. But it's those small details, you know, when you're intimate, when you're really linked with your job, then the extra effort, you're going to make it. If you don't have this link, people say, okay, fine. But now we are trying to reach the top quality and over that. So you need to do this extra effort. And that's the only way to succeed.
And also, it must be like a sense of ownership. If it's the same people working the land every year, they have a greater sense of pride because they've walked those rows year after year after year.
Sure. And you know, when you plant a vineyard and when you work on it, even if you trim the vines, and you do that for the coming 2 or 3 years. So if you do something bad, then you're going to pay for the next and the year after that.
Right.
And of course, I mean, of course there is, there is one family that owns the estate, but it's the ownership is also the way you're using it. And people, you know, they are using it. We do weddings, we do anniversary at the estate for the employee. And that's also a way of owning the place.
I heard, and we never got to see this. We went up to your tower, which was crazy. It is a very, it's a weird thing to overlook all of Bordeaux because there aren't many high buildings. It was, that was really cool just to get a real sense of the terroir. But I heard also, do you guys still have a hail prevention cannon? Is that
yes.
a thing?
Yes, we do.
Can
we
you
do.
Explain the hail prevention cannon?
It's so it works with different radars, satellites, and when the clouds are coming, there is a signal is sent to the cannon, and then there is this big sound wave that is supposed to break the small ice particles that are forming to do some. So that's the way it works. And it protects like 500 meters around the cannon.
Is it loud? Like if I was walking by, would it scare me?
No. We did like a noise protection, right? But still, it's when it's working and I am in my office 200 meters from here, the windows are shaking.
Hey, but that's badass. But I mean, I've read the stories in parts of Burgundy where you can have a couple minutes of hail and it can destroy 60% of
exactly.
a vintage.
Exactly. And hopefully we are on the countryside and all surrounded by forest, other chateaux, and then some people living But this is all, I mean, all the people living, or not all, but living in Bechevel or Saint-Julien, they're working in the vineyards. They know that we don't do that to annoy them, just because to protect our job. And there is nothing that we put into the atmosphere. It's only the waves, the sound waves. But I know that in Margaux, for instance, they got problem with the surroundings, because it's making noise. And people here in, you know, you're closer to Bordeaux, and people, you know, they don't work on the vineyard. They are just here because the price of the houses are cheaper. So they, and then that can make some problem.
Oh no, where you guys are, it makes more sense. There isn't a lot of population around you. You're right. It is just all forest and fields everywhere. What's been the toughest vintage? What I don't know if you've one year where at the end of harvest you're just sitting there going, "Wow, that was difficult." Do you have one vintage that really sticks out that gave you guys trouble?
I think 13 was tough.
And what does that look like? What does that feel like?
I mean, the result is okay, but it took us a lot of energy, and at the end the wine is okay. It's okay, but we had to make such a huge, I mean, it has been tough to get the well ripeness, to get the wine. And then where we usually do like 150,000 bottles of wine, we did less than 50,000 just by selecting the, so it was tough.
So the quality will still be there, but the quantity
is going to be very low. And the quality will be nice, but I mean, there is nothing magic. There is nothing magic. So you can select. So you can do some good wines, but obviously it's not an exceptional wine, obviously.
Is that tough? Because I imagine anyone in your job, there's a certain level of control. But when it comes to making wine, you can do everything you think is right. But if it rains on the wrong days and suddenly a lot of the work goes down the drain, is that sometimes difficult to process?
It's not for me. But for the technical team, it can be very hard. And what I'm saying every time is, have you done what you think was the best? Say yes. So fine. Then, I mean, nobody can control the weather. So that's fine. And you have no regrets. You've done everything you can do. So that's fine.
No, that makes sense. How would you describe, if you were the profile of the wines of Loros?
I would say like a classical, elegant, and subtle wine. We don't do over extracted wine, but that's a very, very, I like the, I don't know if it's very, it's drinkable wine, but in a way that it's very, very elegant wine. Mm-hmm.
Is there, and I know we have to be careful about generalizations because vintages change things so much, but is there a characteristic for Saint-Julien that is different than, say, Saint-Estèphe or Polac, or like, is there things you look for that you can say, all right, this reminds me of Saint-Julien?
I think the balance of the wine, it's not easy to describe, but to me, Saint-Julien being between Pauillac, Saint-Estèphe, and Margaux, that's a very balanced wine. So there is nothing remarkable. But it is remarkable to be a balanced wine, to be a classical wine, to be a, like, you know, if you come for the primeur, this Saint-Julien is the appellation where you got the most visitor during the primeur, because that's one is quintessence, I don't know the name, of the wine in the Médoc. That's classic.
What are you excited about the next 5 to 10 years?
I would like to see, you know, I've been there for 12 years now, meaning that the grape, the vineyard that I planted 12 years ago is not, it's not part of the Grand Vin yet, but I think that in 5 years, the first plantation I've made might be into the Grand Vin. And I would like, what I would like also is to see if the being organic, working more into the detail has an impact on the wine. Mm-hmm. I mean, over the last 3 years, 4 years, Gruau has changed a lot, and we are now back in the top 10 of Bordeaux. And now people are thinking that we might, Gruau has been the best Saint-Julien. A long time ago, and people are thinking that we are not too far from being the best again. And I'm wondering if it's because of being organic or all the effort we are putting on the new plantation, or I don't know. But I'm very excited about that. Excited about.
How important is the classifications for you guys as a second growth? It certainly adds a level of prestige. But how important is it? And is it as relevant today as it was, say, 25, 30 years ago?
I think it's still relevant if your size hasn't changed. Thing is, you know, the classification, it's almost 170 years old, and the classification is for the château, not for the terroir. You have to be extremely careful, but I would say that it's mainly relevant in terms of terroir and taste. So being second is it's interesting because we are not first. We might have been first if Goyot was in a better shape at that time, which was not the case. Goyot was having a difficult time in 1855. And being second is interesting because you have to make a lot of effort to be on top of the second and trying to reach the first.
How competitive are you? Because sometimes when you hear the term, we're in second, that could be seen as a negative. But as we know, there's some years where seconds are tasting better than the first. Like a lot of times it depends on vintage and sure. The work. But Nicholas, how competitive are you to try to always stay on top?
We are extremely competitive. I mean, but in a nice way. Because we want to increase the quality. We want to increase our brand, and we want to increase our business because it's also a business. It's not, we are doing wine to sell it. So we are always looking for a better wine, but we're not necessarily looking at the first classified. You can also look at the third, the fourth, the fifth, and non-classified because people have some good ideas everywhere. And the classification, it's easier for the consumer to understand. It's also like a social mark. Because, you know, if you bring a bottle of first classified, you know that it's 3, 4, 5 times more expensive than a second wine. But that's more on the business side. But in terms of quality, we look at the first, but we look at the other chateau as well to improve and if you have new techniques and stuff like that.
How much have you learned in the last 12 years? How different are you now in terms of your knowledge of wine and winemaking?
What I've learned is the main thing is we have time. We have time. And it's urgent to wait. We are on a long-term business. It's a long-term business. And, you know, I arrived there. I was 34. I was coming from a much bigger company. I was the president of a much bigger company, wine as well, but with very high rotation. And, you know, here at Gruau, we do things on the long term. It's totally different. And, you know, I know that now I've got another 25, 30 years to work or to be there. And then the next generation will come. I don't know who, but somebody from the family will come and I will help them to join and to take over. And so that's the main thing that I learned.
Yeah. And I think patience is something we all learn more as we get older. And exactly. For you, it's almost like a relay race. And eventually you hand the baton to the next generation.
Exactly.
Yeah. And knowing
that, you are much more relaxed.
That makes a lot of sense. Before I let you go, I didn't even talk to you about your second wine. I was wondering if you could tell people about the second wine of La Rose.
Yeah, we're doing a second wine and a third wine. So the second wine, it's called Sarget de Gruau La Rose. It's coming from the vineyards, the younger part of the vineyards. So it is like we do about a third of Grand Vin and two thirds of Sarget, more or less, depending on the year. We might do a bit more of Grand Vin in the future, but that's the what we do. The first, the second vin, it's a bit lighter, I would say, a bit more, how can I say that? It's a bit more fruity, and there is less new oak as well. So it's not as complex as the Grand Vin. That's the second vin.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be.
It after 5 to 10 years.
I mean, even that, a second or third wine that you can sell her for 10 years. That's that shows a certain, the mark of quality. I have to say this as we end, Nicholas. I think your wines, I feel you could price them a little bit higher, but please ignore that. I find that your wines are the first wine is still, it's not an inexpensive bottle, but I consistently find it punches above its weight. But please don't tell the people in charge of pricing.
I'm in charge. I wouldn't do. And you know, it's also when I was saying about the long term, we want to make sure that our wine will be drunk in the future. It's not a collectible item. So that's, we want to make sure that people will drink it, have good time, and then buy it again. Because if it's just I mean, if it's overpriced, you buy a bottle, put it in your cellar, and then every time you look at the bottle, you say, I pay like €1,000 for that. I'm not going to open it. No. It's better to pay 200, 300 euro. You open it and then buy another one.
You know what? I didn't even think of this. Is this a problem, and not just Bordeaux, but in Burgundy or other, the most famed wine regions of the world, where bottles of wine are seen more as trophies and less as something that's part of a meal?
I think it might be. I mean, it's quite recent. It has maybe 20 years that people are collecting wines. And, you know, I met people that told me, yeah, should I invest into wines? I said, invest in which way? They said, yeah, invest, you know, like I'm buying wines and then I resell them. I said, it's not the goal. I mean, I don't see the point of buying wines to make money, because the value can decrease as well. First, to me, it doesn't make sense. It's not an investment. It's a pleasure, but it's quite recent. But this could be, to me, this could be a problem in the future. If you're full of wine, I mean, you don't buy them anymore.
Yeah. And it just, it turns it for what wine is supposed to be. And I've never looked at it as an investment opportunity. Like my nicest bottles, I view them and I get excited because I know, okay, in 1 year or in 3 years, I'm going to open up that for a birthday or an anniversary.
Sure. And of course, some bottle now cost a lot of money. It's when you drink a bottle of wine, you shouldn't look at the price. Just remember the price you pay for it. And that's it.
I recommend everyone, if they need to come and visit you, it's a gorgeous location, gorgeous property. Going up the tower and getting to see all of Bordeaux is really cool. And you got a great tasting room as well. Your place is set up very well for serious wine tourists.
Yeah, and we open all year long, so people are most welcome to stop by.
Nicholas, thank you so much for doing the pod. We had a great time with you back in early September, and this has been a really fun interview. Thank you so much for doing it.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.